You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey everyone, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our first mid-month book news check-in episode for 2026. So thanks for joining us as we go over the latest Asian American book and publishing news. As always, we are supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you can access to our members-only Discord server. We can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a member's choice book club pick once per quarter. As always, thanks to everyone who has supported us so far, and hope to see more of you on our Discord in the near future. Yeah, Rira, happy new... We already said our happy new year's last time because we recorded
our December book club pick
in January. But
what is time?
Yeah, how have you been? It's a very important day. We are recording this podcast on BTS ticket day. So Rira is... she's preparing to enter the gauntlet of BTS Bowl. Hopefully... I wish you the best of good fortune, I guess. Good luck.
Yeah, I was telling Marvin, like, I'm pretty zen because I know I will get tickets no matter what, but it's the ticketing part that stresses me out. I really hate premium pricing, and I really hate how predatory the ticketing system is in America, because in other countries they do not have premium seating or dynamic pricing. So
yeah, I feel like one of the things about living in like a hyper-capitalist society, and we're always railing on this, is like you can always count on the corporations to just extract every bit of value from you that they can.
Like, for example, it is cheaper for me to fly to Korea and to like go see BTS. But obviously, like, Korean ticketing is much fiercer. And same thing with like Japan. Japan, you don't even get to pick your seats. It's lottery.
Oh, wow.
You like buy your ticket, but you don't know where you're sitting until like the day of or like the day before. So, and then Europe is also cheaper. So I'm just like, I would make it an international trip, but I think I'm kind of done with international trips for this year. So, anyway, some author friends I've seen have gotten their tickets already, like June C.L. Tan, the author of Jade Fire Gold and Darker by Four. She got her tickets this morning. Kat Cho, the author of Once Upon a K-Prom and Wicked Fox. She also got her tickets. And fellow author friend Susan Lee, author of Soulmates and Romance Rivalry. She was telling me that she's going to multiple cities. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure she has at least one ticket now. So we have a lot of BTS author friends, and, you know, hopefully their luck rubs off on me today. Yeah. But we are here to cover our book deals for the month of January. It's a pretty light month for deals because the publishing industry goes on break for like the second half of December, and by the time it's like January, they're playing catch up. So I'm pretty sure there's going to be more book deals in like the following weeks, but we're just going to cover the ones that we have now up until the 22nd of January.
Yeah, so let's jump into the book deals. Rira, what is our first deal of the episode?
All right, so our first book deal is, in a two-book deal, Dell preempted North American rights to Lily Liu's Death Wish. This supernatural slow burn sapphic romance, in which a reaper comes face to face with the soul who got away, now a vampire who's ready to move on, but first they must track down her killer before he targets another woman. Publication is planned for early 2027. Maybe it's because Vampire is back in anime. It's like back in vogue. So like I'm getting like mad anime vibes and I love it. I love like Shinigamis and like Reapers in like love stories. So that's great.
Yeah, this is definitely the type of like romantic fantasy pairing you see in like webcomics or in anime, like kind of supernatural, but also make it romance, right?
I do find it funny that the person who got killed, the soul, they're now a vampire. So it's like, yeah, I just want to die. Like, can we like wrap this up? What's the next step? And then it's like, no, let's figure out who your killer was. So like, we don't have any more victims. And it's like, but I just want to move on.
And also let's kiss, right? Because it's a sapphic romance.
Yeah, it's sapphic romance.
I wonder what's the time frame, right, between this soul getting away from the Reaper and finding them again as a vampire? Because if this is like spanning centuries, that would be interesting too, right?
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah. Congratulations to Lily Liu.
Yeah. All right, next up, Putnam bought at auction North American rights to What Hungers in the Dark by Monica Kim, the dual timeline novel, which alternates between modern Manhattan, LA, and Seoul. With 19th century Korea, follows a young woman searching for her missing brother and falling into the clutches of an enigmatic and dangerous family, as well as a young nobleman facing off against his powerful, pitiless father. Publication is scheduled for summer 2027.
So lots of different settings. It's always tricky when you have a story that takes place during the modern day and like the past at the same time. Yeah. 19th century Korea, I'm trying to think what time period it was.
That would be the 1800s, right?
Yeah, 1800s. I mean, so way before Japanese occupation, but still a lot of conflict with the Japanese. Yeah, I'm not a professional when it comes to Korean history, so.
Yeah, and I also wonder if this is like a, like, do we know the genres? Is this like a lake house type situation? I don't think they're talking to each other, right? It's kind of more multi-generational, maybe, like the generational trauma passed down from.
Yeah, it does sound like that. It sounds like more of like a generational saga book rather than like lake house scenario where two people in different timelines are able to communicate with each other. Because yeah. Otherwise they would have told us that it was like supernatural or, you know, paranormal. But
right. Although What Hungers in the Dark feels like a thriller title, right? It's like a very...
Well, it says like there's a missing brother and there is like a dangerous family. So I'm like, I don't know, human trafficking? Like my mind just like goes there, like organ trafficking. But yeah, like I love seeing more books on like historical Korea because... You know, like we used to only have one. We used to just have Pachinko, and now there's more. So that's nice. All right. So our next book deal is Norton Young Readers acquired How to Crash a Kite by author-illustrator Ellie Peterson. The STEAM picture book follows two different siblings who are trying and failing and then trying again to build their very own kites. Publication is planned for winter 2027. So Marvin and I just had to look up what STEAM stands for, and it's pretty much STEM, but the A is for the arts. And I'm like, oh, good. They're including that now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Rira and I are both, you know, as longtime hosts and producers of a book club podcast, very much proponents of arts education and the ability of arts and media to, like, you know, build critical thinking skills. So that's cool that there is like a teaching, I guess, methodology, framework that includes the arts in addition to like STEM subjects. Rira, have you ever been a kite person? Because like I don't think I've ever like, I know I built my own kite once for our school project, but I would never like, I've never gone out like kite flying. That's never been that's just not like part of my childhood.
I think I flew a experience. Kite once at a beach a long time ago as a kid, but I felt like I didn't do anything. It was mostly the adult that was accompanying me who like set up everything and was like, here, have the spool. Now you're flying a kite.
Yeah, I was way more of like a paper airplane kid than like a kite kid. Not that they're mutually exclusive, but like if I'm like flying something out in the park, it's usually like a paper airplane or like a model airplane type thing.
I mean, it does still take aerodynamics, and you need to like it is like a lot of like try again and failing, because you want to make the best model, and sometimes the airplane is not, I mean, it's still like aerodynamics, and you still have to calculate what makes like the wings most effective. So I'm guessing that's the same with the kite. It's like, okay, how do we make it so it actually defies gravity?
But also looks cool, right? That's, I think that's where the A comes in. Like, we want to make a cool looking kite that flies real good. So yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. Maybe this, again, my barometer is, would I pick this book up for my kids? And, you know, maybe my kids will be kite kids. We'll see.
Well, that depends. Do you want to be a kite dad? Because I've learned from, you know, teaching kids art that when it comes to arts and crafts with younger ones, with little ones who are like toddlers or, you know, before the age of 6, it's always the parents who have to finish the projects. The kids barely start, and then they're like, I'm bored, here, you do it. And then if you don't do it correctly, they cry.
Oh.
So the question is, are you willing to put in the work to make a kite?
I mean, at this point, I'm willing to do whatever my kids want to do to make them happy and not, you know, little jerks to me. So, yeah, if they're in the kites, like we're in the kites. We're kite family now, right? But anyways, congrats to Ellie Peterson on the book deal. Okay, next up, Macmillan Godwin Books has acquired Toki's Tricks by Aram Kim, a picture book retelling of a beloved Korean folktale featuring a quick-witted rabbit who must outsmart a determined soft-shell turtle who has deceived him. Publication is scheduled for fall 2026. Are you familiar with this folktale, Rira?
No. The only folktale that I know about a rabbit and a turtle is like The Race.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, the rabbit is ahead of the turtle in a race, but then the rabbit's like, I'm going to take a nap. And the turtle beats the rabbit. So that's the only story that I know.
Classic. It's the classic story of like slow and steady wins the race, right? Don't be a jerk.
Yeah, don't be a jerk.
But
it's not over until it's over.
But it seems like in this like Korean version, the turtle is the jerk, which I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm so used to the Western tale. Like, it doesn't sit right. Like, how does this work? But I'm really curious about maybe, you know, to our listeners out there who are familiar with the original Korean folktale, maybe write in and let us know how this whole thing works. I could also Google it. I'll probably just Google it.
Yeah, I figured like the turtle in the story is like an old man. Imagine if like the turtle is like, get off my lawn, you know? And then like
that's true.
The rabbit is like a brat and trying to outsmart the turtle's like restrictions. I don't know. It could go a lot of ways. I don't know the folktale.
Yeah, the turtle as like a mischievous or like as a shady like Ajisu does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah. All right. Next up, Kokola Bot Girl Gods by Kay Ming Chang, the author of Bestiary. It is her debut novel in verse, in which two queer teen girls propelled by rage and grief make a deal with a Chinese sea goddess for the ability to project their consciousness into different bodies so that they might escape the cycle of reincarnation. Publication is scheduled for spring 2027. We've had Kay Ming Chang on our podcast for Bestiary. So it is, I think she did talk about this book with us like towards the end of the end of our interview. So good to see that it has come into fruition.
Yeah, I mean, Kay Ming is always like her books are like fantastical, but also like very visceral. I remember like Orgamese being a very visceral read, but also very like her books require you to like lock in, but also be ready to like be subjected to like some, again, like you said, really gnarly like storytelling, right?
Yeah, gnarly.
Yeah.
Everything's gnarly. Sorry, guys. That was just like my K-pop brain going off. But yeah, like her books are very out there in a good way. And it's nice that, you know, she is also tying in Chinese folklore into the story. So I think, yeah, so it's like nice that she's also integrating Chinese folktales into this new book. And also novel in verse is pretty difficult to write. So that is another additional challenge that she has put on herself.
Yeah, so looking forward to seeing more from Kay Ming. Congrats again on the new book. Okay, next up, Wednesday Books has acquired in a preempt Cerulean by Sajni Patel, a dark feminist YA reimagining of The Little Mermaid meets Pirates of the Caribbean about a fierce Atlantean princess's high-stakes adventure across sea and land alongside a ghostly pirate to seek retribution on the men who prey on sirens for their powers. Publication is slated for summer 2027.
Love that Sajni is doing more adaptations of fairy tales. I guess Medusa is not really a fairy tale, but that's a myth. I digress, but it's really cool.
I mean, myths, fairy tales, kind of, you know, it's more semantics than anything, but it's cool that, so yeah, we had Sajni Patel on our podcast a couple years ago at this point, right, to talk about her dark feminist YA reimagining of the Medusa myth.
This is the part that I'm, like, intrigued about, like, retribution on men who prey on sirens for their powers, because usually sirens are seen as the villains because they're the ones who, you know, lead sailors to their death by crashing into rocks. So I'm like, what are they doing hunting down sirens? Unless it's like that weird thing in I remember, like, maybe it was like the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie, but there were mermaids and they're like, oh, we need a mermaid's tear for like one of the ingredients for our quest. So I'm like, maybe.
Or maybe they're kidnapping them to like use their powers to like, you know, hypnotize marks or whatever.
Yeah. What's interesting is when we think of sirens, we think of mermaids, right? But OG sirens in Greek mythology, they're actually like kind of like harpies. They're birds or like humanoid birds.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting how like that has evolved in myth. And now it's just considered like when we think siren, we don't even think about the bird people. We think about mermaids.
Yeah, I love that Sajni is, you know, continuing this theme of, you know, reimagining myths, but like told from a more feminist like point of view. Right. And, you know, hope to see more of this from her, too. Like what other mythological like characters need a redemption arc? Right. Because I feel like it's like the whole of Greek mythology. Like we talked about, like a lot of them is like, yeah, a lot of these like monsters are just victims of like
bad marketing.
Yeah.
All right. So our final book deal is Charles Bridge Acquired World Rights to Hanging Out with Nani, a picture book poetry story by Vikram Madan. And Kathleen Shad bought world rights to illustrations by Isha Lobo. And the book follows a boy in a South Asian family who bonds with his maternal grandmother when she comes from India to help with the new sibling. Publication is set for spring 2028. Yeah, it's a pretty common tradition in East Asian culture and also I'm guessing South Asian culture to have the grandmother stay with the mom after the birth. So,
yeah,
I can only imagine like if you're a child and you're greeting a new sibling and you have like another person come in and change the dynamics of it all, it could be very confusing.
Yeah, especially if you are not familiar with this grandparent, right? If you've never gone to visit them over the summer or if they're like, you know, just not, you know, in your lives all the time. Because I think a lot of Asian families are multi-generational, but a lot of us are also like separated from our extended family for most of the year. I do wonder, yes. So in Chinese culture, there's this thing called Sing the Month, which is like 1 month after giving birth, the mother is not supposed to like leave the room or leave the house. They're just expected to stay inside and like recover, right? And usually this time, that's usually why grandma comes and, you know, takes care of things like cooking and taking care of the house and taking care of the baby and things like that. I wonder if Indian culture also has a similar thing.
Yeah, I would figure that they do. Because like you said, Marvin, like a lot of Asian culture is like multi-generational and people usually live in like the same house and, you know, women taking care of other women. It's a shame that we don't kind of have that support network here in America, unless you're very, very lucky. So, but yeah, it sounds like a really cute story. I love it when like the kid bonds with a grandparent because, you know, a lot of us did not have that bond because usually our extended families living on the other side of the world. So, yeah. So that is our roundup of book deals for the month of January. Since there weren't that many book news, at least in the Asian American spaces. We're going to go over books that came out earlier this month and are also going to be coming out in the second half of January. This is also because we didn't really have any author interviews as of late. So, you know, some of these authors we might have on our podcast in the near future, but I did want to highlight some of these books. All right, so our first book on our January 2026 books list is The Swan's Daughter by Roshani Chokshi. It came out in January 6th. It came out on January 6th. To rule the Isle of Malis, one only needs to win the hand or literal heart of a male descendant of the royal bloodline. Thanks to a poorly worded wish to a sea witch, Prince Aris knows that if he fails to meet a girl who loves him, any bride can murder him and ascend the throne. Despite this bleak knowledge, he holds a tournament of brides to compete for his hand and heart. While courting potentially murderous bachelorettes, Aris meets Demelza, the human daughter of a Veritas swan, whose songs can reveal any truth. He strikes a deal with Demelza in exchange for her truth-telling songs to discern his potential brides. He will keep her hidden from her murderous father. So Roshani Chokshi is the author of The Gilded Wolves and The Star-Touched Queen. So I am pretty familiar with her prose. Very lush, very like fantastical. This sounds right up her alley. Very fairy tale like, but also with like a dark twist.
Yeah, it feels like, I feel like we did cover this book on one of our book deal episodes, like probably years ago at this point. But
I do like the fact that it's like, oh, you want to be queen? You can either make the prince fall in love with you or kill him and carve out his heart. And I'm like, I feel like the easier answer is to just carve out his heart. And I love how this guy knows that it's like, yeah, most of them are going to go for like killing me. So let's figure out who, like, actually
why would you want to deal with a dummy who can't even make a proper wish when you can just like be the king? I do love that this is like, it's kind of a death game, but like also a reality TV show, like, but also a dating show, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, a reality dating show in a way, kind of like The Selection, which is a guilty pleasure book of mine, if you guys have read that in the early 2010s.
Yeah, so if that sounds interesting to you, like, the book is out now, so you can pick it up at your local bookstore and also, as always, on our Books and Bold bookshop. All right, so our next release is Fly Wild Swans, My Mother, Myself, and China by Zheng Chang, released on January 13th. The book is a follow-up to her 1991 memoir, Wild Swans, Three Daughters of China. The book follows Zheng as she seizes the opportunity to study in London after Deng Xiaoping opens the borders of China in 1978, inspired by her mother's tenacity and willingness to confront CCP officials over her father's 1967 imprisonment. After earning a doctorate in linguistics, she wrote extensively on China's history, including a controversial biography on Mao that got banned in China. Her mother shielded her from the blowback, but her protection came with a devastating cost as Zheng was barred from visiting her mother even on her deathbed after Xi Jinping ramped up censorship in the country.
So this book is more of like a mix. It's not purely like a historical text on China's like political like ups and downs, but it's also like mixed with her own personal experiences. From what I've heard, like, because her first memoir, Wild Swans, came out in 1991, which was a very, very long time ago, China was a very, very different country. And also, like, her relationship with her mom changed after she came out with that book. Yeah, so this is one of those stories where it's like, oh, okay, it's a biography, but also a lot of history is put into it.
Yeah, sounds pretty compelling. So yeah, if that sounds interesting to you, definitely check it out.
Our next release is A Year Without Home by V.T. Badania. As the Vietnam War comes to a close, 11-year-old Gao Sheng and her extended family must flee Laos to escape the Vietnamese communists who are hunting down those who fought alongside the American military. After much strife, the family finally arrives in Thailand, where they live in two overcrowded refugee camps. Gao Sheng tries to be a good daughter and care for her family's younger children and help prepare meals. all the while stifling her resentment against the Hmong culture's strict restrictions on gender roles. As the year passes at the camp, Gao Sheng discovers what it means to rebuild a home and learns to advocate for herself.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this book is also it's a middle grade historical fiction novel in verse. So it's meant for younger readers as well. So I think it's cool that we have a story, you know, kind of like a story from the perspective of like a young refugee meant for young readers. Right.
Yeah. And I do love how this book also dives into gender roles, because just like in Asian culture overall, there tends to be a lot of burden on the women to do a lot of the labor, for like a lot of the caregiving labor. So I'm really glad that it kind of dives into that and what it means to kind of stand up for yourself amongst like these traditions.
All right, next up is This Is Where the Serpent Lives by Daniel Muinuddin, also released on January 13th. Moving from Pakistan's dazzling chaotic cities to its lawless feudal countryside, This Is Where the Serpent Lives spans six decades and traces the lives of a wealthy Pakistani clan and those who work for them. Told in four interconnected parts, the novel begins with the orphan Yazid, a tea boy who rises to a respectable place to the Lahore household of Colonel Attar, only to find his position threatened by conflicting loyalties and misplaced trust. The story also follows Saqib, who was born on the colonel's country estate to a poor gardener, as he is entrusted with the management of a pioneering business, but he overreaches and finds himself an outlaw, confronting the violence of the corrupt Punjab police. Meanwhile, the colonel's son competes with his cherished brother for the love of a woman and discovers that her choice colors his life with unexpected darkness as well as light.
So six decades, that is a very long time. And I'm just guessing that Pakistan had really transformed in those six decades. And you can only imagine how these characters have also transformed their lives in that time.
Yeah.
All right. So another book that released on January 13th is City of Others by Jared Poon. In the sunny city of Singapore, the government takes care of everything, even the weird stuff. Benjamin Toh is a middle manager in the Division for Engagement of Unusual Stakeholders, DEUS. And his job is straightforward. Keep the supernatural inhabitants of Singapore happy and keep them out of sight. That is, don't bother the good, normal citizens, and certainly don't bother the bosses. Sure, he's overworked and understaffed, but usually people, and senior management, don't see what they don't want to see. But when an entire housing estate glitches out of existence on what was meant to be a routine check-in, Ben has to scramble to keep things under control and stop the rest of the city from disappearing. He may not have the budget or the bandwidth, but he has the best, if highly irregular and supernaturally inclined, team to help him. Together, they'll traverse secret shadow markets, scale skyscrapers, and maybe even go to the stars, all so they can just do their goddamn job.
This sounds really cool. I love it when you mix like supernatural, like the supernatural with like the mundane bureaucracy, right? Like this is like, it's what makes shows like Severance so compelling, right?
Yeah, yeah. Monsters, Inc. as well. It does kind of remind me of Monsters, Inc. because you have like paranormal stuff and it's like, I just want to go to work. I just have to meet this quota. Super relatable.
I mean, the government division being Deus, kind of on the nose, right?
Yeah. I do wonder what kind of supernatural inhabitants are part of the city.
Probably just Chinese ghosts, maybe vampires. I don't know. Monsters, maybe?
Who knows?
Yeah, it kind of feels like there's like that John Wick-y world building too, where just there's like an underworld underneath the normal world, right?
Yeah.
All right. Also released on January 13th is The Moon Without Stars by Chanel Miller. At the beginning of seventh grade, Luna knows who she is, an observant, quiet girl who loves writing and making zines with her best friend Scott. But when one of their zines takes off, Luna is somehow swept up into the popular group and learns just how much of herself she's going to have to compromise to stay there. Will she give up on her writing? Her best friend? What about her own beliefs on who she is and what she stands for?
Do you remember zines? Do you remember when people just used to like make magazines of their own with their friends? Like, you know how to draw? Come on in. You want to write about your hobby? and nerddom, come on in. It was really a fun, organic time back in like middle school and high school for me.
Yeah, I actually did make some like not zines, but like, we did like comics with my friends. We would like draw like stories together. It was a fun time. I do love that this is it feels like a Mean Girls. Like it feels like, you know, Outkast gets taken in by the popular group and like has to like deal with an identity crisis. This is a middle grade book, so definitely the right audience for this type of like story too, right?
I wonder if it's set in the past and not set in like modern day. Because when I think zines, I really think like late 90s, early 2000s.
Because I feel like kids now still it's do like, zines though. I feel like zines are coming back, like kind of this DIY stuff.
I wonder. I mean, I guess like a digital zine would be what? Like a Tumblr account? although Tumblr is a little bit different now compared to what it was in its height in the 2010s. But yeah, I mean, I would like to think that zines are like physical zines are a thing amongst middle schoolers. If you're a middle schooler or if you know a middle schooler who makes zines, pretty cool. Ahead of your time, or I guess like not ahead of your time because I just said 90s and 2000s, but you're cool.
I mean, it feels like that kind of like physical media. I feel like physical media is making a comeback, right? As everyone kind of walks off of like everything being digital. So I can kind of see zines being like, let's make something with our hands, right? Let's make something with our that we can just like have.
Yeah, I mean, junk journaling has made like a big comeback too. So I think you're right with a lot of physical media coming back into vogue. So, yeah. All right. So our next book is A Midnight Pastry Shop called Hua Woltang by Yi On Hua. 27-year-old Yun Hua has inherited a neighborhood bakery from her estranged grandmother. Her grandmother's will spells out two conditions. Yun Hua must keep the shop going for at least another month and only open it to customers from 10 p.m. to midnight. Yun Hua quickly discovers that the bakery's customers are spirits who need help resolving unfinished business before they can pass on to the afterlife and be reincarnated. With each specter she helps find closure, Yun Hua learns which special desserts live in their earthly memories and grows to understand her grandmother after all these years. This sounds super cozy.
Yeah, this feels like there's that Netflix show that's I think also based on a book series, Japanese book series called Midnight Diner, which is kind of like, you know, it's a genre of books, which is like, hey, let's solve your problems through food, right? You should really go to therapy, but food is also therapy. And let me unlock, let's like Anton Ego you like from Ratatouille and like help solve your, you know, your emotional baggage, right? Only this time with ghosts and pastries, which is, it's a fun twist.
I was going to say that this book reminds me of Before the Coffee Gets Cold, which was like another like tale of like a small food establishment where, you know, memory comes into play. And like for this, it sounds like her job is to find a dessert in the pastry shop that is going to like give the spirits peace. Remember your former life? Like, wasn't that great? Like, wasn't this something that like you want to hold on to until you get reincarnated? I would love for a bakery to be open from 10 p.m. to midnight because I get snacky around that time. So
there's plenty of donut places that are open 24 hours.
Not the same as a Korean pastry shop, okay? I really... Like, if I could have salt bread in the middle of the night, that would be great. But obviously, there's no places near me. Although I have a Paris baguette and they are open till 9. So,
yeah,
I guess there's that.
Just got to stock up. If you know you're going to have a 12 o'clock salt bread craving, just buy a bunch of salt breads at 9.
It's not the same. I want the vibes.
All right. Next up, How to Commit a Postcolonial Murder by Nina McConigley, which released last week on January 20th. It's summer, 1986. The Creole sisters, Georgie Ayar and Agatha Krishna, welcomed their aunt, uncle, and young cousin, newly arrived from India, into their house in rural Wyoming, where they all live together. Because this is what families do. Until the sisters decide that it's time for their abusive uncle to die, as they blame the British for their family's troubles.
I mean, I make jokes all the time about like how colonizing countries should make reparations for all the things that they've done to the oppressed country. One funny thing that I've been seeing because of like BTS ticketing is like people from like Malaysia and Taiwan being like, I feel like people in like people in Japan or France or whatever, whoever their colonizer was, like they owe us BTS tickets for all the reparation for what they have done. And it kind of has the same energy here. It's like,
yeah,
our family is shitty. My uncle is shitty because the British made him that way.
Yeah,
so
it all stems
now it's time
from,
for him to die.
Yeah, it all stems from being oppressed through imperialism. Yeah, it does sound like this is like a very like black comedy. Also, Agatha Krishna, that's a pretty good name for
a
book
name.
With murder.
Also, I'm like, rural Wyoming, like for an Indian family to move there where there's like no spices, no like link to community, that sounds like a bad time, especially if they're moving into your tiny house. It's like,
yeah, but also like
the only brown people we know are each other.
Yeah, but also this is what happens, right? Because of the Immigration Naturalization Act, a lot of, you know, a lot of people from Asia came to the States to go to college, to go to grad school, and they all end up in like, and a lot of them end up
middle
in like
nowhere.
Rural areas. Like my aunt actually came to the States for grad school and went in Utah.
Ugh. Yeah. Ugh. Oh my goodness. How did she survive?
Well, usually you have like your little group of like fellow countrymen or fellow Asians that you can like create a small community with, and then somehow one of them has the hookup to the spices, right?
My cousin, when he was doing like student exchange, he got placed in Kentucky, and he was the only Asian person for miles. And I remember him complaining about food, and we had to like send him care packages from Georgia. We're just like, I don't know why you got sent there, but.
Yeah.
Here's some Korean food. Here's some samjang for your rice because goddamn, you need spices. All right. Next up, we have The Elsewhere Express by Samantha Soto Yambao, which came out also on January 20th. Raya Sia has felt aimless ever since the death of her older brother and gave up her dreams of becoming a songwriter in favor of living up to her parents' expectations. One day, she boards the subway and inexplicably winds up on the Elsewhere Express, a magical train that only appears to those whose lives are adrift and provides a sense of purpose and peace to its passengers. On the train, Raya meets Q, an artist who, like her, has lost his place in the world. Together, they explore the train, meeting colorful crew and passengers. But something dark has also stowed away on the train, and Raya and Q are tasked with dealing with the threat to the train's magical existence. I love trains and magic.
Yeah, this is I'm getting some Ghibli from this, right? Some like,
yeah,
like a Spirited Away type of situation.
Yeah, like Spirited Away does have that train, but I mean, Snowpiercer is not a whimsical train, but I'm kind of thinking of it like that, with like this train with like compartments that are like different worlds. It sounds super cool. Yeah, like I really love it when magical realism is mixed in with trains, because there's just something so magical about trains.
Yeah, and also add to it some Asian American ennui about living up to your parents' expectations of you and giving up your creative dreams. I think it's a good formula for like a fun whimsical tale.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Also released on January 20th is The Poet Empress, a fantasy novel by Shen Tao. In the waning years of the Azalea dynasty, the emperor is dying. The land is consumed by famine, and poetry magic is lost to all except the powerful. Yin Wei, a peasant girl desperate to save her starving family, volunteers to be a concubine to the cruel heir to the throne. To survive the deadly court politics, Wei must harden her heart and become dangerous herself, even if it means becoming a poet in a world where women are forbidden to read, and composing the most powerful spell of all, a ballad of love and death.
I do love how in this world, poetry is magic, like magic spells.
Yeah.
And I just looked up the cover for The Poet Empress, and the cover looks amazing. It is so gorgeous and lush. So I'm like, I don't know who illustrated it, but if I saw it off the shelf, I would have definitely just picked it up.
Yeah.
Just from looks. Judge a book by its cover. Because
especially fantasy books, right? Especially fantasy books.
Yeah, especially fantasy books. All right. So our next book, we have Two Women Living Together by Kim Hana and Hwang Seon-woo, translated by Jean Ng. And the book came out on January 20th. When most of their peers were moving in with romantic partners and having children, Kim Hana and Hwang Seon-woo chose independence, savoring solitude, quiet mornings, and the unmitigated freedom of living alone. But in their 40s, something shifted, and they were met with a new, unexpected loneliness. Refusing to settle for the outdated choice between marriage or isolation, Hana and Seon-woo made a radical decision to buy a home and live together, not as lovers, not as roommates, but as chosen family. Now a bustling household of two women and four cats, Hana and Seon-woo still value solitude, but can do so while sharing a life and its meaning with someone else. Together, they navigate the challenges and comforts of cohabiting in midlife, the growing pains of interdependence, and the unexpected rewards of compromise when you're you've grown set in your ways. From sick days to career wins to aging parents and beachside retirement plans, they are redefining domestic bliss on their own terms, where love, partnership, and home are defined not by tradition, but by choice. I feel like this is like very radical for Korea, because there is like a whole shenanigan in Korea where they're like, women need to marry and have children right away because the birth rate is so low. And it's like, leave us alone.
Yeah, it sounds like this is in conversation with other books like Kim Ji-young, Born 1982, which we read for this book club, which is like, hey, let's imagine a world where you don't have to do that, right? And, you know, it'll be okay. It's actually maybe perfectly preferable to, like, just chill and not have, like, marriage and procreation be the reason for your being, right? Like, you can live your own life and not have to do that.
And I heard that there is an uptick of, like, single moms, like, moving in together to become, like, one family in Korea, because it's already just so hard to be a single mom. And, you know, especially if you're, like, working as well and you don't get any child support, you can, like, rely on other women to, like, take care of your kid without, you know, being like, oh, my God, do they know how to cook? Do they know how to, like, have, like, emotional maturity? And, yeah. But I used to joke with, like, my friends being like, oh, when we're old, we should all live together, like, pool in our money, buy a house somewhere, and be Ajumma fangirls together and travel the world so we can go to concerts.
Like, yeah, I mean, if you have friends that are cool, that, like, you can picture yourself living life together, like, living in the house together, like, why not? It sounds like going back to, like, those college days, right?
Yeah. And I trust women to take care of me, too. Like, I feel like we are pretty good with, like, taking care of each other and providing, like, emotional support. So,
yeah,
why choose a man when you can have not a wife, but but you guys know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I can't think of a reason. All right. We're moving on to books released on January 27th, which is this week. So these are books coming out in the next day or two, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. But first up, it's Early Mornings at the Laksa Cafe by Janet Tay. Every morning before sunrise, Lin Ah Hawk opens the shutters to his small kitchen on Carpenter Street, lights an incense stick, and prepares the best laksa soup in all of Kuching. According to the Lim family legend, the laksa secret ingredient, their ancestral broth, was gifted to them by a deity who promises the family prosperity as long as the broth is passed down through the generations. But Ah Hawk is aging, and the broth's quality is fading. His only son, Wei Ming, has no interest in the family business, having spent 8 years in Hong Kong trying to prove himself as a chef. Now he's struggling with gambling debts, embroiled in a love triangle, and the restaurant he's been left to run has lost its Global Restaurants Guild star. Invited home to Malaysia for his father's 60th birthday, Wei Ming sees a chance to escape his troubles. But when old conflicts resurface and a local businessman threatens to destroy the family legacy, father and son are forced to ask themselves what truly matters.
I had to look up what laksa is, and it looks delicious. It's kind of like a spicy noodle dish.
I think it's a Malay dish, but there's like different versions of it as well. It's pretty good. I like it.
It's always so sad when like a good noodle place loses its touch, you know?
No, I do love that this is a story about like a multi-generational restaurant family, right? Where the son is, you know, taking after the family trade, but not necessarily the family business because they want to like be a modern chef in the modern world. It's kind of like, I feel like this is, like, I know it's not an Asian American story, but it's a very like Asian American coded story of like leaving the nest, but coming back because you realize that like what truly like makes you passionate, right?
Yeah. Going back to your roots.
Yeah. I also love a good food story. So definitely like.
Yeah, you do. You do love a good food story. That's like most of your picks for, yeah. for a book club.
I will say early mornings at the Laksa Cafe, I did not expect this to be such a like a gripping family drama. Early mornings at Laksa Cafe sounds like a cozy, but this is definitely like a, you know, intergenerational family drama a la like number one Chinese restaurant, right?
Yeah, I mean, early mornings at a restaurant is peaceful only for the customer. It's not peaceful for the people running the restaurant. They have been up since 5 a.m. prepping. Stressful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Understandable. All right, so the last book that we have on our January 2026 releases is A Beast Slinks Toward Beijing by Alice Evelyn Yang, and it came out on January 27th. In this debut historical fiction novel, 25-year-old New Yorker Qin Zi reluctantly takes in her estranged father, Wei Hong, after receiving a call that he'd wandered onto the porch of her childhood home in Virginia. An alcoholic with dementia, he needs constant care. As he fades in and out of lucidity, droning on about a prophecy, he recounts his life story, beginning with his upbringing in Anshan, China, with an abusive father. He tells her of his bloody days as a Red Guard during the Cultural Revolution to his mother's youth under Japanese occupation. As Qin Zi listens to her father's dark history, she finds herself plagued by strange visions. Fox spirits trail her on her evening commute. A terrifying jackalope stalks her nightmares. And the looming prophecy slinks ever closer.
Yeah, so this is a historical fiction with like magical realism that also incorporates like both Chinese and Japanese mythology, which is an interesting mix.
I like a lot of the times when our families decide to finally open up on their war stories or like their trauma, it's like, oh, I wanted to hear it, but at the same time, did not want to hear this. Especially if they were like one of like, especially if they did atrocious things, you know, like the Red Guard has done terrible things during the Cultural Revolution. So it's like, oh, are we the bad guys? Am I a descendant of a bad guy?
I mean, the thing with the Red Guard is also they were all kids too, right? And they were kind of like told like this is the way to be patriotic, to love your country. And seeing the world that we live in now in the US, like you can see how like a whole generation of like kids can be indoctrinated to like believe some like pretty messed up stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. History repeats itself.
Yeah. And, you know, we've seen, we've read and we've seen books that dive into like the stories that our parents don't want to tell us, right? Because, you know, it feels like you couldn't have lived through that time without a little blood on your hands. And that's not necessarily something that you want to share, right? That's like cursed knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Immigrant families be dropping lore when it's like the most inconvenient times and you're not emotionally prepared to hear it. So I totally understand the main characters like, I don't know if I wanted to hear this. And, you know, you're kind of going through a mental health crisis. So that's another additional layer to her challenges.
I mean, we're at the age now where we're like pretty soon we'll be our parents' caretakers. Like some of us already are. Right. And that's also a part of, you know, we live in a society where children are kind of expected to care of our parents, whether or not they've been good to us. And I do like that, you know, we're touching on all these themes, but also with a little dose of like magical realism. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that
is our list of January 2026 releases by authors of Asian descent. Obviously, I probably didn't get everyone, but I hope that the ones that we did highlight, you guys will take a chance on them, see if they interest you. And
some of these might even become like a future book.
An author chat.
So yeah, so if there's any books here that you would like to see us cover on the podcast, definitely let us know as well. But yeah, I guess with that, I'll do it for our first mid-month book news check-in for 2026. Rira, no, thank you once again for compiling all the publishing announcements as well as the January releases. It was a pretty hefty list. I'm sure it took you quite a bit of time, but always appreciate your efforts for the book club. And yeah, good luck on your quest to acquire those BTS tickets.
Yep, it's happening in 30 minutes. So yeah, right. I'm going to have lunch and try not to cry.
Yeah. All right. Before we go, just a quick reminder that our book club pick for January 2026 is Reef by Ramesh Gunasekara. It is a historical fiction novel taking place in Sri Lanka, following a servant boy for a prominent family during a time of unrest. This book was a patron's choice, so thank you to our Honey Pulpa members for helping us pick this month's book club pick, and we will be discussing this book on our next episode. So definitely, if you finished the book and have any thoughts, please let us know on our Goodreads forums, or if you are a patron supporter, on our Discord discussion thread as well. But yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Bill Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We've got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation.
The good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallusbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.